Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. One of the great joys and satisfactions for me to do this show is that I get to tap into my fabulous stable of colleagues and friends, and Dr. Patty Britton and Dr. Robert Dunlap. They are partners in trainings and in life, and they've been on this program before, but it's been too long since you've been on, so welcome again. I'm so happy you're both here, Dr. Robert and Dr. Patty.
Thank you,
Diana. It's a real pleasure, as always.
Thank you.
We are in two different locations, so
yes.
We will do our best to pace ourselves and be here for you.
I think you're both such seasoned professionals and sexologists that I have no worry at all. It is a little more challenging when you're not all in a radio studio together. And for the 5 years I was in Hawaii, I was in that situation where I had a radio studio and we could actually look each other in the eyes and not talk over each other. So it's a little more challenging, but we're going to do it because we're going to talk about some really fun things today.
Great.
Yes. Let me just, by way of introduction, start with Patty Britton. She is a nationally board-certified clinical sexologist, and she's really a world-renowned sex coach. She and Dr. Robert Dunlap have co-founded Sex Coach You, and that can be found at sexcoachyou.com. So far, so good?
You're doing great. Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about that and your trainings, each year Dr. Patty conducts 5 to 10 professional trainings, an average of 6 major consumer events, participates in 100-plus national magazine news interviews, and speaks on over 10 major radio shows. Well, I'm sure glad you're on mine today.
And it's always fun to be with you, Diana.
We used to all live in Los Angeles together, and I miss you guys a lot.
Oh,
and
you.
Thank you. So let me introduce Dr. Robert Dunlap. He's also a seasoned media expert. He has an interesting background because he's appeared in over, 400 commercials and in print, film, and television. And he has made some really interesting documentaries, Beyond Vanilla, Zaviera Hollander, The Happy Hooker, Portrait of a Sexual Revolutionary, and in fact, your last SAR, we're going to explain that to the audiences, was conducted at the Happy Hooker Zaviera's home in Amsterdam. So that'll be very interesting for our listening audience to hear about. Dr. Robert Dunlap is also a clinical sexologist with a specialization in BDSM kink and fetish populations. If you all stay tuned, we're going to talk in that regard about field trips that Dr. Patty and Dr. Robert take as part of their trainings, and about 50 Shades of Grey, and because they use film as part of their trainings, and Hope Springs. So we're going to discuss a lot today. The websites, again, are sexcoachyou.com, and then your newer website is theissr.com, which stands for the Institute for Sexual Self-Realization. So that's theissr.com. So that was a long introduction. So happy you're here with me again.
Thank you.
You need a long introduction because you have lots of credentials.
Thank you. We've been so blessed in this field of the understanding of human sexuality for so many years I myself have been in the field for almost 40 years, and Dr. Robert, who's been a media pro long before he entered sexology, has really been working together with me over the last decade. And it's so sweet to be able to share what we're doing with you, Dr. Diana, because we just admire and love you so much, and you not only bring the wisdom and the kind of seasoned, reasoned approach to talking about sex and sexuality, but you bring a sense of humor, you bring your compassion and your beauty on the inside and out. So thank you for having
me. Oh, wow. Thank you very much, Batty. I didn't expect that train of superlatives, but I feel, of course, back at you, both of you. I just,
Welcome to the Love Fest.
Yeah, I know. So the listeners should respond to that because we just like each other, and I think we communicate very well, and you have so much to offer. Now, recently, you've been doing SARS, and that means Sexual Attitude Reassessment and Restructuring.
Correct.
And
yes.
I'd really like you to describe what SAR means. I mean, I know it's provocative, and I know it's designed to help participants explore and understand their beliefs, attitudes, values, and biases within the realm of sex and sexuality. But you are ASECT approved, and I'd like to go back to the one you did in Amsterdam and then talk about your more recent one in Las Vegas and then talk about what you have in the future, because you have a very international future for your SAR trainings. So first, kind of give our listeners an overview of a SAR training.
Well,
you want to start, Patty?
I'll give a little spin on it, and then, Robert, you can add to it. Because I've been in the field quite a long time, the inauguration of my own journey as a sexologist was attending a SAR because I was working at a Planned Parenthood in the state of Vermont. It was a New England Planned Parenthood, and one of the requirements was that all staff needed to go through a SAR training, and I didn't know what the heck that was.
Mm-hmm.
And it really remains the same. It began in the 1960s, in the late 1960s, early 70s, on the West Coast, and certainly our alma mater, and also where we're on core faculty at the Institute for the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, which you can look up at iashs.edu,
mm-hmm.
Really were the people who founded the concept of SAR. And why it's so important is, you said it, but it's really, in a simple way, a sensitivity training. Any one of us, any one of you listening, who wants to work with the sexual dynamics or the aspects of a person's sexual life needs to be processed. Because if our stuff gets in the way, or we have buttons or hot spots, or our feathers get ruffled when someone says, hey, I'm into BDSM, I like to be whipped and have chains tinkling in the background when my lover blah, 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 or someone who says, well, actually, I am marrying, you know, there is a new phenomenon in sexology called OS, Objectum Sexualis, and for those of us who've been in the field a long time, it's a very confronting aspect of sexual expression. It means people, not a fetish, but people who have authentic erotic, sexual, and romantic attachment to inanimate objects, as opposed to someone whose arousal is derived from an attachment to an inanimate object. And we know the story of the woman who married the Eiffel Tower. And there's
I don't know that story. What is that story?
Well, I can't tell you her name, but it's on YouTube. And one of our dearest colleagues and one of our faculty at Sex Coach U in Track 3 is Dr. Amy Marsh, who is just an exquisite scholar and clinician and educator and trainer. And she's really renowned worldwide now for speaking out about this particular sexual orientation, which is to objects. There's a woman who was in love with and spent her life focusing on a white picket fence. So
I think it sounds a little sad.
Well, I'm not going to comment on my opinion about it. I'm just drawing a brush stroke, I hope,
yeah.
with how diverse sexual expression can be.
Well, of course.
It can be, you know, monkdom and asceticism and self-proclaimed celibacy. It can be kinky stuff. It can be good old vanilla. It can be rather barren, like the couple in Hope Springs that I hope we get to talk about.
No, we will, because that's
gorgeous,
I think,
case,
important.
Actually. Mm-hmm. Or people who are into all kinds of things, including polyamory, or people with disabilities, or people who enjoy porn or adult expression. It's such a wide gamut, and if any one of us wants to work with the sexual part of a human's experience and or story, we need to know that we're a clean container for holding the space for working with that client's concerns. And well, that's why we're like a crystal. We need to be cleared.
Yes, no, I agree. There is never room for judgments.
Correct.
You know, if a client comes in and they've got a particular kink and it's our first session, it would not be helpful for me to cross my arms and say, "You do what?"
Exactly.
Exactly.
Would you, Robert, talk about, oh, the BDSM thing and Beyond Vanilla? I've seen your documentary. I've seen all of them. Most all of them. But
the premieres, bless you.
Yes, and the premieres, yes, yes. But Beyond Vanilla, after you did that documentary, did you have any new insights about
it changed
BDSM
my life
and so on?
Yes, it did. It absolutely changed my life. And just to piggyback on what Dr. Patty just said,
mm-hmm.
fetish is a psychosexual attachment to a material and or an object. And the materials can be like latex, leather. That's mm-hmm. why there's the leather community. That's
right.
why there's people who dress up in leather halters, tank tops, trousers, things like that. They're a signal as well to that population. Now, when I was making Beyond Vanilla, what we had discovered was what is known as the hanky code. And that's another way of defining by if you wear a red hanky, for example, in your right pocket, that means you're someone who takes whatever that particular thing is that they want to do, which happens to be fisting. If you wear it in the left side, that means you're the one who does the fisting. So there are all kinds of colors and patterns, black and white, BDSM. If you're wearing brown, that stands for scat. If it's yellow, it's for, can we say, urine play?
Yeah. Well, like golden showers, maybe.
Exactly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's that whole spectrum of people. And while I was filming Beyond Vanilla with my partner, Class Lilia, we had discovered that once people got into that arena of exploration, they would continue on and look into other realms, so to speak, and discover other things within themselves
mm-hmm.
that they're able to embrace as well,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is really fascinating. So with running this back into about a SAR, we show Beyond Vanilla. We explain the different fetishes. People get to see who these participants and players actually are. And what's really been remarkable, during the interviews, we have found that this particular segment of society is a little more intelligent. They are
not surprised.
Lawyers, judges. And the other thing that people most of the time ask, well, they must have been abused as children. That is absolutely not the case.
Well,
they
some
were
of
on
them have been, but
and
not
the absolute,
all.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, I just was going to say, some of them have been abused, but not
no
all.
No higher than the normal average population. That's the statistic.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what's really amazing about that element of society. Now, what's happened, too, is because of the popularity of 50 Shades of Grey,
mm-hmm.
it's being that much more normalized in society, and they're looking at things a little differently. Maybe mm-hmm. they are a little kinky. Maybe they have a particular fetish. And recently there was a very famous general who came out and admitted that he had a big foot fetish.
Interesting. Was he retired, this general?
He's retired now, yes.
Yeah, because that wouldn't have probably gone over very well in the Army or wherever he was.
Oh, I don't know, but as you know, 2 years ago they also had a really strange thing that happened on, I don't mean strange in that context, but something that was highly unusual, where they did all of this gay type of stuff on the ship, and it was permissible.
Interesting.
Oh.
They videotaped it, and they made a little movie about it that played around the ship, and then it was in re-release, so to speak, through the rest of the Department of Navy.
I have a middle-aged female client. She works crazy hours. She takes care of the kids. And at the end of the day, she wants to be spanked. Yes, spanked. And, of course, she loved the three volumes of 50 Shades, and I've read them. And one of the things that I kind of like, and we were going to get into this, the three of us, about the clear negotiation that needs to take place with BDSM. But, you know, Christian Grey, while he has a sad side, he's also extremely solicitous and apologetic, perhaps for a sadist, I'm not sure, but he's always asking the young heroine in the book, Anastasia Steele, about every minute of her feelings and bringing her all kinds of creams and lotions to soothe her after spanking her. And so maybe he is the easiest, difficult man of all time. I'm not sure.
Well, one thing that's really interesting about spanking and that kind of activity is that, in fact, there is a nerve that is called the pudendal nerve.
All right.
That nerve is triggered into the whole system for sensation, and it is actually one of the things that can power up having other activities.
Hmm. Yeah, but don't you think most people, unless you have the intention of spanking from the beginning, but just even in fairly vanilla relationships where there's occasional spanking, that it feels better when the person is really sexually aroused?
You know, that's a really good question, and I've shared this before. When I was living with an aunt and uncle, when my aunt would do something, and my uncle would say, "You're going to get a spanking later." Mm-hmm. And I would go, "Oh, my God, what did she do?" And then I realized as I got older, "Oh, my God, what did she do?"
So, yeah, and then?
So, yes.
Did you like it?
My aunt must have liked it.
Yeah.
And having said that, I think they had explored different things that way themselves.
Yeah.
Which was just amazing, you know, that I could realize that later on in life, what that mm-hmm. dynamic was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me jump in for a second.
Please, Patty.
Unless we have to take a break.
Well, we don't have to take a break till half past the hour, and then it's for
great.
About 3 or 4 minutes.
And to just add a couple of kind of language, the whole mm-hmm. concept of BDSM, and whether we're talking 50 Shades of Grey or Beyond Vanilla or what millions of people in this country and around the world consensually engage in as adults. And that is either erotic power exchange, which can be really a mental game.
Mm-hmm.
It's about playing with power. It's about the dynamic of what is going on energetically.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a psychological, intellectual, energetic, emotional, electrical charge that goes through the two players. And the other aspect of BDSM is what we call sensory exploration or sensory play. And that's why having a light spanking in the beginning before arousal has really occurred or escalating with a different sensation, such as we take our students during SARS and during my other professional trainings often to a BDSM play space or public club where people are consensually engaging in behaviors that they've pre-negotiated And we, as the guests in the venue, get to observe, because often these people enjoy being watched, which is what we call exhibitionism.
Uh-huh.
And often people enjoy watching, known as voyeuristic behavior. And so that idea of changing the sensation dynamic, of using, we actually did a demo at our most recent SAR in Los Angeles, where we had a very seasoned mistress who shared not only her skills and her knowledge, but her equipment. And it was really exciting, because I remember, you know, some of our students said, oh, I'll volunteer. And, you know, Robert, you can talk about your experience. But going from a flogging device, which is like a cat of nine tails without the sting, something that can be used to create what is called thuddy sensation, T-H-U-D, as opposed to bitey or stingy sensation. There are different ways of playing. There's paddling. There's using a hand, always on soft tissue, never bone, or on the organs. And they're all ways that couples and people as players have found to escalate sensory play so that they're excited. They're afraid slash excited, which feels inside the body as the same type of energetic experience, and biochemically it's encoded by the brain in the same way. So this is actually very sophisticated sexuality.
Yes.
And, you know, going back to SAR,
yes,
part of what we do at SAR is we not only, first of all, it's not an educational experience, it's a sensitivity training.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a training in terms of you're going to learn how to work with clients. It's really about you, the participant, and where are you when you begin and where do you end up in terms of your acceptance and tolerance of the almost infinite range of possible human sexual expression. That's what SAR is really about. And we never disclose, nor does anyone actually, what goes on in the SAR room, what media we show, what our speakers say, what even the topics are that we cover, because it is an experiential journey, and the element of surprise is actually part of it. Sorry about that. And
your doggy buddy.
Yeah, this is the dog is saying, yeah, yeah, I agree. And she's had her SAR. And it's very important to understand that SAR is not a how-to, but a who-are-you.
Who are you?
And that's where are you?
That's a very good distinction.
Yeah, it's very different from any other kind of training in the world, and ours is different from any other SAR providers, because every provider has their own brand or stamp or spin.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sure.
And people can read about your trainings on your
at www.thissr.com. I have an entire page,
right,
or section devoted to the SAR trainings. And
right,
at Sex Coach U, for those of the students around the world, and we're in many countries with many students.
And Ms. PRN is in many countries, too, so that's
absolutely
a good thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. I love this radio network. It's just so exciting and so broad-reaching. And really, with the global world that we all live in, we need to think about the entire community, not just the American community. The United States is actually, we've found as we travel, one of the more repressive.
Yes.
And less certainly friendly around positive sexuality and erotic materials and many other things. And so we find that it's very important for clinicians and educators and ministers and anyone who is going to be working with sexuality in any context with their patients or clients or students that they have this incredible experience of attending a SAR. And ours is a weekend intensive. We don't believe in the model that ASECT has allowed for the last decade, which is a requirement of only 10 hours in total to experience SAR. We believe that 15 is the minimum, and even at the Institute in San Francisco, it's 80 hours. You don't know who you are when you come out the door at the end of that, right, Robert?
Oh, yeah. That changed my life.
Yeah, it's truly transformational. And we have students who reported even in Amsterdam, this changed my life. We don't know how to begin to express our gratitude for this.
Yeah,
so
change,
it's powerful.
Change their life. So Can you just, we will be taking a break in about 4 minutes. Can you give us kind of an overview? I know you can't do specifics of what it was like to be at Xaviera Hollander's home and to do a SAR in Amsterdam.
Well, one of the really fun things about doing the SAR, and we had it for our opening night, and I'm sure this is okay, is that we showed my film about Xaviera.
And yeah, good.
People were able to look around and live in that environment that she inhabits. So the questions that we were able to ask her and that she revealed were extraordinary, even things that I didn't even get, you know, into the movie. But that was a very rare thing for someone who is such an icon and someone who is so sexually positive. Everything about her is positive, and the joke is she's trisexual. She'll try anything, at least.
And still, even at 69 years of age, right?
That's right.
Correct.
And, you know, she's a woman who confronted some real barriers in her life. That's what Robert's documentary shows.
Yes, it does.
Amazing.
And so well, and that film has won awards, Robert. I'd like to help you toot your horn there because it's.
I've been very blessed with that. We've had it in over 20 international film festivals, and we had it premiere at the World Association of Sexology in Sydney, Australia. And we've had it on the documentary channel, Canadian television, Israeli television has really embraced it, and they actually flew Xaviera into Tel Aviv, and she said, "Darling, they treated me as though I were a queen."
Oh, nice. Well, those Jews know, they know what to do.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
They do.
That's a great story. So you had, as I understand it from our pre-interview yesterday, you had 22 participants at your SAR at Xaviera's home, the Happy Hookers home.
Yes.
And it was a sellout. You couldn't take any more. It was a space kind of thing.
Yeah, we were really lucky, and we had to, at the end, turn people away because the other element of SAR is that we do a lot of counseling or, like, processing of the emotions of what comes up for people.
Oh, and that's so important, because if that doesn't occur,
yes,
these people are left with all kinds of weird feelings, and that's why it's great that you are both experienced as counselors as well.
That's right.
Thank you.
And it really, you know, what part of the joy of this particular training was not only were we in a Living Legends living room,
yeah,
which, by the way, is an erotic art museum. There isn't one piece of wall that doesn't have erotic art on it.
And I'm fortunate enough. I was there several years ago. Yeah.
But some of us had the privilege of even renting rooms in her B&B. And that, you know, her home is a bed and breakfast, or as she says, it's a bed and brothel. I mean, breakfast.
Yeah,
that's her joke, and she has such a great sense of humor, and you know, despite her, she has some real ravages to her body. Not only the weight gain that occurred, but also she had a torn meniscus the time that we were there and didn't know it, and could hardly walk, and very, very busy with her B&B network, and also she has heart problems. So, you know, she's a lot on her plate to deal with, including another rental, her B&B villa in Marbella, Spain. So,
well,
she is quite the living legend.
She is quite the living legend. And we're going to talk more about your trainings, your field trips, which are so interesting. You most recently were in Las Vegas doing a SAR, and you took your students to Zoomanity, as I understand it.
That's right. So it wasn't a SAR. It was a different training, which we would love to tell you all about.
Very exciting. So let's go to the break and stay tuned. And when we come back, we'll talk about that and so much more with Dr. Patty and Dr. Roberts. We are back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley here today with Dr. Patty Britton and Dr. Robert Dunlap. They're both friends, good friends and colleagues and fascinating intelligent people who do a lot of really interesting trainings, and we've been talking about them. And we've been talking about BDSM, and I just wanted to cite a study, an analysis of 20 studies published in Psychology Today estimates that between 31% and 57% of women entertain fantasies where they're forced to have sex. So it's kind of like rape fantasies are a place where politics and eros meet, perhaps uneasily at times, but in the realm of private fantasy, it would seem that the allure of sexual submission, even in its very extremes, is remarkably widespread. And that's one reason the BDSM stuff is part of the SAR. And you did a BDSM field trip in Vegas as well as Zoomanity. Is that right? Do I have that right?
Well, actually, maybe, Robert, you can talk about the exquisite experience we had for the field trip in Amsterdam, which is such a sex-positive city. It doesn't get any sexier than Amsterdam, but LA is running a close second, and so is Vegas. Right, Robert?
Yeah, I'd love to hear about that in Amsterdam. I can never forget being at the World Congress for Sexology in Amsterdam in 1991, where I got with Candida Royale and with Zaviera. We all hung out together in a nightclub. Boy, was that interesting. This is 1991, before the happy hooker got real fat.
I
that's a whole another show, maybe.
Could be, that's for sure.
Anyway,
Robert, do you want to talk about what we staged and why?
Right. I'd love to hear about it.
I'm going to be revealing something kind of personal. Having made the film Beyond Vanilla, I was privileged to shoot a lot of different scenes that would take place. All of these are absolutely negotiated up front. Everything is absolutely consensual, and what was said had really intrigued me, and from what I also have observed, I thought, this is something really interesting. So, and this was a big surprise to all of our SAR participants, but I had pre-negotiated literally for about 2-3 months being flogged myself.
Oh.
And the situation about it was this. People had reported, they had said, that it felt like an incredible massage. And if someone knows what they're really doing in that process, that's exactly what the bottom or the receiver achieves. It's such a different kind of a sensation. Now, Dr. Patty was mentioning the thud factor. Well, that's exactly what happened. Now, I wasn't beaten and all black and blued and everything, but I was gently flogged where it felt so soothing and relaxing on my upper shoulder area.
Hmm.
It was a unique sensation. And, of course, now when the scene took place, the person who was doing the flogging or the person who was the top dominatrix said, I'm going to get someone here from the audience. Who would like to come up and do this? How about you? And so I went up on stage and was a participant in a three-way type of scene where literally I held someone literally from behind to be support within the flogging and part of this scene. And it was really extraordinary. And, of course, Dr. Patty and Zaviera were howling and screaming, oh, my God, he's actually doing this.
Because it was a unique experience for you, but you had pre-negotiated it, and it sounds like it was memorable for you.
Yes,
and
it was
negotiated in secret.
Yes.
In secret. So you didn't know, Patty.
No.
So it's a big surprise.
Exactly. A very wonderful surprise. It was very exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. So that's interesting that it felt like an incredible massage.
Yes. Yes, it does. And because the particular flogger that was used is of deer leather strips or like thong type of things. It was just really an amazing sensation, and it wasn't painful. It isn't meant to just, you know, really exert or put a lot of pain feeling into it. That's the SM. That's the sadomasochism. That wasn't the case here. That's mm-hmm. what was negotiated. Now, what was being said and done during this particular experience is you have code words. Mm-hmm. You have yellow. I can stand this that's going on, but if I were to say red, it would immediately stop the scene.
Yes, yeah.
So there are code words that are embedded, that are pre-negotiated, and most of the time, it's the stop sign, the green, yellow, red.
Yes. But I'm thinking that the person doing the flogging was probably very well trained.
Yes, absolutely. And I knew this, and when we discussed everything, during this particular sequence, there is what is known as the warm-up. And as the warm-up continues, I'm asked, can you take a little more? Would you like a little bit more? And I can say, yellow, go ahead,
mm-hmm.
yellow.
Mm-hmm.
But if it became too painful or something that was really uncomfortable, I could just say red and it stops.
Oh, that's, so many even vanilla couples benefit. I mean, I know this from 30 years of doing marital counseling. They can benefit from specific negotiation about what they want.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think that a lot of women feel guilty or skittish about claiming responsibility for their own desires. And so they may be more comfortable with being wanted than wanting.
Yes. Now, the other thing about it that is really interesting, and I would really appreciate Dr. Patty coming in off of this statement, is that it doesn't always have to be a sexual exchange. It can be an erotic, which is a little different, and that's for the person who is either taking it and or giving that particular dynamic.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, I was actually going to add a little bit, rather than what you were saying, Robert, in terms of the red light, yellow light, green light. On my website, my home website is drpattybritton.com. And I have a menu that is a pull-down bar, and under that called Resources, all the materials there are free for anyone listening to use, including a couple's activity that's really that stoplight mentality, which is, what is it that we're willing to do? Absolutely green light. What is it maybe we'd like to explore, play around a little bit with? And what is an absolute no-no? And that is so helpful for empowerment, because both men and women deserve empowerment and often need it.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid of
mm-hmm.
stepping on each other's toes. They're afraid of hurting one's feelings. They don't feel they deserve to have the kind of expression or experience that they really want.
Mm-hmm.
And 50 Shades of Grey has opened up the window, in a sense, to give women and men, I think, a lot of permission to explore the unknown, the unspeakable, the unspoken between them. But it isn't the answer for everybody. And that's why I like couples, and when I work with them, I have them do something like this, to also look at another freebie I have called 59 Turn-Ons, which is a checklist of 59 different activities that you, as the person filling out the checklist, might say, yeah, that turns me on. Nah, not that. And it's great for couples to look at it and then look at where they have the overlap. Because
mm-hmm.
if he's a toucher and she's a talker, they really may be on two different planets when it comes to what turns them on.
Mm-hmm.
And BDSM or sensory exploration really isn't necessarily for everybody. You know, 50 Shades of Grey is a phenomenon because even in 1970s, Nancy Friday was writing about women's fantasies, and it was called Woman on Top. And in there was woman's rape fantasies, as you alluded to, you know.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean acting on it. A fantasy is what gives us erotic edge. It is not about what we want. It is about what gives us our erotic power. And that's what you were saying as well, Robert, is that
yes.
being flogged or being teased or having your arms restrained with your belt, which you had, is really a way of pushing the edge of what do I feel? Where's my energy moving? Is it turning me on? Is it not turning me on? And then later you can use that when you come home to your sweetie and say, I had a really good time tonight. Hey, I am ready for you. And,
you know,
and
you just brought up the other point that's really important, and that's what the BD in the BDSM means. It's the BD is bondage and discipline. And what is really interesting about bondage is that the people who like to be tied up, restrained, and all are the people who have, they're always in power. Judges, doctors, attorneys, fire chiefs. They're always in control, and what they want to be able to give up is that control.
Yeah.
And just be able
right.
to relinquish that and say, okay, I would like that.
I would love for us, if we could, to come back to Las Vegas.
Yeah, I want to do that because I would like, before the show ends today, and we have to stop just a few minutes before the top of the hour, for you to talk about Zoomanity. We didn't get into it in the pre-interview, but you hinted at something quite wonderful. I don't know what it was.
All right. Shall we get into it?
Please. I've seen the show, but it's been a few years, and I think they change it.
Well, what's so important about why we were in Las Vegas is that we were offering the very first inaugural training for a live 10-day intensive that is part of a very new, I mean brand new, California State-approved certificate program offered for the Institute in San Francisco that for the very first time acknowledges, substantiates, and certifies sex coaching as a real accepted profession. That is the hallmark of what has happened and why Las Vegas is really so important to all of us who work in the field of sexology under the umbrella of sex coaches. And it's our hope at Sex Coach U that everybody is going to either go to the World Association of SexCoaches.org or consider getting trained and certified through us, because we have to have standards of care. We have to have ways of assuring competency, quality, and professionalism. And really, this is a brand new subfield of the overarching field of sexology. So there we were in Las Vegas. We had our first crop of students who came from all around the world. It was very exciting. We actually trained at the Erotic Heritage Museum, which is an awesome, awesome world-class sex museum it's so much fun, operated by the Institute itself.
Yes.
It's the campus in Las Vegas for research and also houses some world-class collections of erotic art.
That's true.
We had the opportunity to take our students on field trips. And so Saturday night, the field trip was to go to one of the big shows in Vegas with Cirque du Soleil. And what's so cool about Zoomanity, as you may know, is that it's pretty much all about sex, and it is sexy. And it's topless. The women and the men wear costumes with cod pieces so that it looks like they have raging hard-ons. They're on ropes up in the air and simulating orgasm at, you know, million decibels. They're romping and doing the whole simulation of wild animalistic sex or sweet, tender, romantic sex, whatever kind of sex you can imagine, they're depicting it. And it's very raunchy and rowdy and explicit, except that their bottoms are on.
Right.
So at the end of the show, which was very sexy, and we brought all of our students, so everybody was in the audience, the whole theater was packed. At the end of the show, the guy who's like the MC, who's wearing this skin-tight silver suit with his top open and, you know, the cod piece at the bottom.
Right, right.
Who's like really after all the women. He says, I need a volunteer, and he walks around the whole audience, and where does he land but where, Robert?
Next mm-hmm. to you.
In front of me!
Right. I'm not surprised, Patty.
No,
you deserved
I'm not going
it.
On stage. And he says, oh, yes, you are.
Oh, Patty, this is so great.
I am being manhandled by this guy. There is a group orgy going on the stage. The stage is round and now it begins to rotate. Everybody is screaming at me. And the MC, who is this gorgeous, gorgeous woman, who, of course, is not a woman, but a drag queen.
Right.
Who is about 8 feet tall. I'm five-something, and the silver man is standing next to me. She leans over in her very sexy voice, and she says, "What's your name?" And I say, "Patty." And she says, there's this pregnant pause, "And what do you do?" And I have this flush come over me, and I think, no. This is a moment in a lifetime. And I pause very briefly. I look her in the eye. I take the microphone and I say, "I'm a sex doctor."
Good.
The audience went wild.
Perfect response, Patty. Good for you.
It was so much fun. So anyway, I have a photo on my Facebook page of me, the drag queen, and the silver guy on the stage, and it was just a hoot. My students couldn't believe it. So Vegas was an amazing experience because we were able to have 100 hours of training to train these people how to be a competent professional sex coach. And it's a 500-hour program through the Institute in San Francisco that also has a distance learning component and earns two certificates that actually can be applied toward a master's or a doctorate as well. So we are so excited that Sex Coach U now has an academic arm through the Institute in San Francisco. And we couldn't have had a better time than we did at 116 degrees outside Las Vegas.
It was 106 degrees?
116.
Whoa.
Yes.
Okay, but at least everything's well air-conditioned.
It is. It was brutal, though, being in so much heat.
Yes.
But we had a wonderful time. Our students really raved about the experience.
I'm sure. So, people that are listening in other countries, they can still take advantage of your Sex Coach U.
Yes. Actually, we're in 16 countries now, and we have affiliates that we're training to be trainers in Moscow, in Prague, in London, in Poland, Warsaw, Poland. We're working with some people now to give live trainings as well in Australia.
Yeah.
So we're really excited. We've all of a sudden like mushroomed.
Yeah, and sex coaching is really an adjunct to therapy. It isn't therapy. It doesn't require a degree. It requires comprehensive training, which we offer.
Mm-hmm.
Track 2 at sexcoachu.com is our professional, kind of the meat and potatoes training. And we're really excited about where we're going, and we invite anyone interested to even just check it out, take our sample course. And sex coaching is something you can do virtually, which is why it's so thrilling, because a lot of our clients, for example, are doing what we're doing right here. We're on the phone. We're using Skype. Most of my clients that are live in my own practice are not LA-based at all. So coaching is really the phenomenon of the future, and not that therapy is wrong or there's anything that, you know, isn't of value regarding therapy, but we find that most of our clients have been failed by therapy and are really looking for a much more short-term solution that's empowerment and results-driven.
Short-term solution that is empowered and relevant.
Yes.
That's what sex coaching delivers.
By the way, Patty's very humble about it, but she wrote the book that's called The Art of Sex Coaching.
Yes, talk about that a little bit, either of you.
Patty, please, it's your book.
Well, it's the first book, and actually right now the only book of its kind in the world, published by Norton & Company, one of the most prestigious publishers in academic and professional training types of publications, and I was invited to write the book, which is an honor in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the book is a how-to manual, and I am very humble about it. I just really sat with someone who helped me write it because we wanted to get it done very quickly, and I just did really what's called a brain dump and then went out into the research to substantiate the findings so that it's definitely coming from an evidence-based approach. And it's really 46 different sexual concerns, what causes them, and how to help the client overcome the problems that they present. So it's a very useful how-to book, The Art of Sex Coaching, in ebook or in print. And what we did is we brought the book alive.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really like having me in your computer or on your TV screen. When you get the lectures, there I am spending an hour to 2 hours with you. And then you go into your textbook and many, many, many other readings and explorations so that you really get competency in terms of being able to work with real live humans. There's no such thing as a simple case anymore, and it's very complex. And what I like to say is that being trained professionally to do sex coaching or any other helping art is really about avoiding what I call the Humpty Dumpty effect. I never want any human being to sit with or talk to another person and feel without the competency and the training and expertise they need that they can open that person up and have the egg break and not know how to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And that's my mission in the world, is to save people from those really horrific and traumatic kinds of experiences so that they ultimately can have the best sexual experience that they really intrinsically deserve to have.
You have talked last year when we spoke about the Meads approach, and you mentioned the Humpty Dumpty effect. And I mean, that's a real strong message and a great visual. You don't want people breaking up and then being with somebody who doesn't know how to put them back together. And even in your SAR trainings, you mentioned about people processing their feelings. They're going to have, many people are going to have a lot of strong feelings come up with all these visuals and all that goes on with a SAR training.
That's right. And SAR is really foundational, but learning is really beyond a SAR. I mean, a SAR is about putting yourself kind of in that that tumbler when you take the rocks or the seashells and tumbling them to have smooth, round edges so that the sharp edges are gone. But you really need to fill yourself up. I believe that we have an obligation to be as schooled and as knowledgeable and as expert as we can if we're going to have the privilege of really being there to be what we call in therapy and coaching to be the container for
the
what
container.
That client presents. We need to be able to create a huge space for that. And, you know, we're living in very dangerous times right now regarding sexual freedom and even sexual health. And, you know, not to get into my political rant, which I will not, but if certain people are elected into office in the upcoming American election this year, a lot of sexual rights may be eroded dangerously. And we already see the hatred of women. And we see the judgment against women's sexuality and women's sexual rights. And these are rights to sexual health.
Patty,
these are not add-ons and sprinkles on the top of the cupcake. This is the bread.
Patty, we have to stop.
Oh, no.
Yes, because they want me to stop a couple minutes before the hour. And, of course, you brought up something very provocative at the end. But the whole show has been so fascinating and quite provocative in general. And I do thank you both. And we'll have you back, I hope, sooner than a year. I mean, like a few months
from
now again.
We're happy to come back for part two when our travel schedules permit us.
Perfect. I want a part two.
You want us.
Yes, I want you. Thank you very much to you both. You're just exceptional people and trainers, and I just am so fond of you. And so, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, sweetheart.
All right. Bye-bye.
Michael Getty, come.